The headlines: Iran's leader says the Muslim world can claim its rightful place in global geopolitics through unity and overcoming the temptations of enemies. Another bloody day in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military attacks the Jenin refugee camp, opening fire on Palestinian youth and medics. And British Prime Minister Liz Truss dismisses her finance minister amid divisions over her government's economic plans to tackle a deepening financial turmoil in the UK. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's leader says the Muslim world can claim its rightful place in global geopolitics through unity and overcoming the temptations of enemies, especially the U.S. and Israel. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "To have unity, Muslims should work together to preserve their common interests and thwart the plots of arrogant powers." The leader also noted that the differences between the two branches of Islam should not lead to disputes among Muslims. According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the enemies have been seeking to drive a wedge among Muslims by creating and empowering Israel. He warned that divergence among Muslim nations has paved the way for intensified crackdowns and atrocities against people in Palestine and other Islamic countries. Ayatollah Khamenei was speaking at a meeting with the participants of the Islamic Unity Conference, which was held in Tehran in recent days. Masoud Chajara with the Islamic Human Rights Commission says that unity among Muslims is the only way to thwart U.S. plots.
It really is now very clear for everyone to see that what has come in the last years as a result of policy of United States and the Western world, in not just in the region of Middle East, but everywhere else. I mean, look, it's very easy. Just look at Afghanistan, look at Iraq, look at Syria, look at Libya. You see that there is a destruction, total destruction of the civil society, destruction of the infrastructure, and what they have replaced it with is really chaotic and sort of an environment where it's not fit for ordinary human beings to live. And the solution is that Muslims to come together. Muslims, in reality, are on receiving end of all these oppression, and they need to unite and they need to stand.
Moving on, the streets of the occupied West Bank become the scene of a somber farewell to another young Palestinian killed by the Israeli military. Matin Zabaya was shot dead during an Israeli raid on a Flashpoint refugee camp in Jenin earlier today. Also, a Palestinian doctor identified as Abdullah Abu Tin was shot while attending to the injured. The doctor later lost his life. Eight others have been wounded separately. Muhammad Mahir Turkman, the Palestinian who carried out an operation injuring seven Israeli soldiers in September, has died of his injuries at the hospital. Israel has intensified its deadly crackdown in the occupied territories, killing more than 100 Palestinians so far this year. From Ramallah, our correspondent Mona Kandil tells us more about the volatile situation in the West Bank. Let's listen in.
The Israeli forces said the operation is meant to arrest Palestinians wanted for security reasons. As we are speaking now, we're receiving that hundreds of Palestinians are taking part in the funeral procession of the young man Matin Dababa in the Jenin refugee camp, and the operation is still going on. All entrances to Nablus city, that is the first city while on the way to Jenin, is completely closed. All military checkpoints are closed there. Palestinians are not allowed to enter Nablus and Jenin areas. We have to mention that this is happening in the last few days in search for a Palestinian who carried out a shooting operation on Tuesday, and the Israeli forces are still searching for this Palestinian man whom killed an Israeli soldier near an illegal settlement near Nablus.
The olive harvest season has kicked off in the Gaza Strip amid a crippling Israeli blockade that has battered the coastal territory's agricultural sector. Asher Shannon has more details in the following report from Gaza.
The olive harvest season has begun in the Gaza Strip, and farmers are picking olives on their land in order to provide for their families. Palestinian farmers and their families leave their everyday routines in the middle of October and dedicate some of their time to pick the fruits of nearly a year of hard work and special care. The olive harvest season runs until early November. The tiny coastal territory used to have a thriving olive industry, but it has suffered a major setback due to years of Israeli blockade and wars, as well as the systematic destruction of olive trees.
Israeli attacks against Palestinian farmers are deliberate and systematic. During every war on Gaza, Israeli forces attack Palestinian farms and destroy crops and olive trees. Israeli forces use bombs and bulldozers to destroy Palestinian farms. They also used planes to spray toxic chemicals on farmlands.
The state of Gaza's olive farmers reflects the scope of human rights violations committed by the Israeli regime against thousands of Palestinian farmers.
Israeli forces uprooted our trees several times in the past, but we will not stop growing olive trees. Olive trees are a symbol of our resilience on this land. The Palestinian people have been here for thousands of years, just like olive trees.
Israel's tight restrictions have been preventing farmers from acquiring badly needed equipment for irrigation and planting.
The situation is very difficult, especially for olive farmers. It takes many years to grow olive trees, and the Israeli blockade has made it extremely difficult for us to get fertilizers and badly needed farming equipment.
The annual olive harvest season is considered a key economic, social, and cultural event for Palestinians. Olive and agriculture in general have been hit hard by the Israeli blockade and war since 2007. Farmers here are struggling to keep this vital sector alive. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
As the entire Europe races to prepare for an energy crunch this winter, France seems to have more on its plate with widespread industrial strikes. Staff at six nuclear plants are now joining an earlier walkout by refinery workers. A union representing energy workers says maintenance work at nine nuclear sectors has been halted. It says two other plants have also reduced output. More workers are at other nuclear sites are planning to join the strikes over the weekend. The move could threaten power output at a time when Paris is trying to restart its nuclear reactors to alleviate a looming energy crisis this winter. Refinery workers have also been striking for almost 3 weeks, causing many gas stations to go dry. The CGT union, which initiated the industrial action, has vowed to continue the walkouts after failing to agree with oil giant Total Energies over pay. Britain has appointed Jeremy Hunt as the new chancellor. He will replace Kwasi Kwarteng, who departed amid market chaos sparked by the government's controversial economic growth package. Kwarteng was asked to stand aside by Prime Minister Liz Truss less than 6 weeks in the role. He was under pressure to reverse his fiscal plan after it shook markets and prompted a public backlash among politicians. Britain has been reeling from high inflation, a cost of living crisis, and soaring energy prices. Last month, Liz Truss introduced key fiscal policy pledges that were laid out in Kwarteng's so-called mini-budget plan. Among the pledges were vast amounts of unfunded tax cuts. These were meant to be financed through borrowing billions in bonds. Following Kwarteng's departure, Truss announced a U-turn and raised corporation tax. She's already lost the confidence of some of her own party members who were reportedly plotting to oust her. NATO defense ministers pledged to send advanced weapons to Ukraine until such time as Kiev wins its war against Russia. Peace campaigners say the only way to end the conflict is through diplomatic efforts. Jerome Hughes reports from the NATO headquarters in Brussels.
There was no mention of peace talks to end the conflict in Ukraine as NATO defence ministers met in Brussels on Thursday. Spain, one of 30 NATO countries, has pledged to supply Kiev with advanced air defence systems.
This comes on top of what other allies have delivered over the last few days. I thank all allies for their significant contributions, and I urge them to continue to step up.
Ukraine's Defence Minister, Oleksiy Reznikov, attended the meeting in Brussels. While he's in Belgium, who's running things back in Kiev? It's a question we put to one expert during an online interview.
The Americans, because the Americans said we are offering intelligence information, we are coordinating the flow of weapons. They direct the battlefield. They have satellites under the disposal of their military.
NATO says it has doubled the number of its battle groups in eastern regions of the alliance. More than 30 warships are patrolling the Baltic Sea and North Sea. Critics say this steady build-up in recent years is designed to provoke Russia and keep NATO relevant while pumping trillions into the arms industry. NATO's Article 5 states that an attack on one member of the alliance is an attack on all of its members.
The United States is absolutely committed to its Article 5 commitments, and we are committed to defending every inch of NATO's territory if and when it comes to that.
NATO says Russia's nuclear forces are being closely monitored. The alliance confirms it's going ahead with nuclear war deterrence exercises next week, dubbed Steadfast Noon. The drills will involve nuclear-capable aircraft, but apparently will not include any live bombs. Asked if the timing is bad given heightened tensions, NATO boss Jens Stoltenberg said it would send out the wrong signal if the exercises were suddenly cancelled now. Jerome Hughes, NATO headquarters, Brussels.
The epidemic of gun violence in the United States is taking more lives. Five people have been shot dead in the state of North Carolina. The shooting took place on Thursday in the capital, Raleigh. An off-duty police officer is among the victims as well. The incident left two other people wounded, with one of them said to be in critical condition. Following the shooting, police started a massive manhunt and urged citizens in the neighborhood to remain indoors. They say a juvenile suspect is now in custody. No more details are available about the suspect. The governor of North Carolina has reacted to the worrisome acts of gun violence in America.
Tonight, terror has reached our doorstep. The nightmare of every community has come to Raleigh. This is a senseless, horrific, and infuriating act of violence.
The mayor of Raleigh has also called for measures to stop what she calls mindless violence in America. A total of nearly 49,000 people lost their lives due to gun-related injuries of all causes last year. Similar incidents in the past have prompted widespread calls for tighter gun control laws, but to no avail. International lawyer Barry Grossman believes bias legislation and social injustice lie at the root of gun violence in America.
That the problem in the United States is less about guns and even shooting than it is about the disenfranchisement of vast swaths of the population, biased laws which are also unfairly enforced, and an infotainment industry which has run amok for many decades by glorifying crime, gang membership, and violence. Certainly the U.S. has the highest gun ownership in the world. Something like 40% of homes have guns. And for every American, there are 1.2 guns in circulation in the United States. So if anything, it's surprising that there aren't more gun deaths, intentional gun deaths. But in terms of what causes these outbreaks, these people to go, as we used to call it, postal, I come back to the core issues, which are social injustice, disenfranchisement, unfair laws that are biased and unfairly enforced.
People in Afghanistan celebrated the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad and Islamic Unity Week. Muslim scholars, they're stressed the need for Muslims to avoid divisions and join hands to deal with the challenges facing the Islamic Ummah. Rahmatullah Baghlan reports from Kabul.
Afghan Muslims marked Islamic Unity Week and the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad holding ceremonies in various cities. Here at Al Zahra Mosque in Kabul, Muslims gathered to celebrate Islamic Brotherhood and the legacy of Prophet Muhammad. religious scholars and participants said they are facing conspiracies and brutalities cooked and inspired by arrogant powers and terrorist groups. They emphasized that Muslims can foil such plots through unity.
Uzbek, Hazara, Pashtun and Tajik, we are all brothers and members of the Islamic Ummah. It is our responsibility to unite around Prophet Muhammad. We denounce any division between Islamic sects and countries. The Muslim world is the common land of Muslims, and we don't believe in colonial era borders. Therefore, we should help liberate Al-Quds. Al-Aqsa Mosque is the beating heart of Islam. Prophet Muhammad said that the protecting Quds is the same as protecting Mecca and Medina.
Jamia Afghanistan.
Recently, the Afghan society faced devastating plots and challenges, but we could overcome them through unity among Muslims. The enemies of Islam and Arabian powers plotted different conspiracies, including terrorist attacks, to sow sedition and pave the way for their interventions. We Muslim brothers are aware and united. Such evil plots and acts will lead to nowhere.
Likewise, the Al-Mustafa University in Kabul hosted a conference to discuss the character and morality of the Prophet of Islam. The event addressed the important role of Prophet Muhammad as a messenger of peace and kindness. Attendees here said Prophet Muhammad is their best role model ever. The Islamic Unity Week comes as Afghanistan this year faced waves of terror attacks, especially against Shia mosques and schools. Afghans say such attacks will only strengthen bonds of brotherhood between Muslims in the country. The Afghan nation has successfully symbolized Islamic solidarity in their society. They say no to discord in the face of enemies' plots. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned though. Bye.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In Britain, power companies are to face a windfall tax after Prime Minister Liz Truss was accused of another screeching U-turn, having previously rejected calls to impose a levy. Stay with us as we look at the British media's coverage of this story. The British newspaper The Independent has more on this story. Business Secretary Jacob Rees-Mogg has launched plans for a cap on revenues of low-carbon electricity generators in what effectively amounts to a temporary windfall tax on the sector's profits. The Labour Party said Prime Minister Liz Truss has been dragged kicking and screaming into the U-turn after months of resisting its calls for further levies on the extraordinary profits being made by the electricity-generating companies. Reports suggest that the cap could limit prices to as little as £50 to £70 per megawatt hour, compared to current prices of around £500, with the government taking as much as 90% of the wholesale revenues above this level. Jacob Rees-Mogg's business department declined to confirm figures, which are subject to consultation. But they said the scheme had the potential to save billions of pounds for British billpayers, while allowing electricity generators to cover their costs, plus receive an appropriate revenue. But industry body Renewable UK said that, as designed, the scheme would mainly impact on older wind and solar energy projects, but voiced concern that it could skew future investment towards fossil fuel energy sources. Renewable UK's Chief Executive Officer, Dan McGrail, said, "We are concerned that a price cap will send a wrong signal to investors in renewable energy in the United Kingdom. A price cap acting as a 100% windfall tax on renewables revenue above a certain level, while excess oil and gas profits are taxed at 25%, risks skewing investment towards the fossil fuels that have caused this energy crisis. This decade, we need to attract £175 billion of investment in secure domestic wind power, and we can already see the investor turmoil that the European Union's proposed price cap is causing in the European market. To limit the negative impacts, it is essential that a cap is set at a level that doesn't make the United Kingdom less attractive to investors than the European Union, and is technology neutral and has a clear sunset clause in place. Ministers have been looking for means to rein in unprecedented profits being made from nuclear and wind power and solar energy, which result from the fact that their prices are tied to gas, which has rocketed in price as a result of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Prime Minister Liz Truss has previously resisted Labour's call for an extension to the windfall tax imposed by former Chancellor Rishi Sunak on North Sea oil and gas producers, insisting that any such levy would deter future investment. Britain's Guardian newspaper has more on this story. Renewable power companies will have their revenues capped in England and Wales after the government bowed to pressure to clamp down on runaway profits. The announcement, late on Tuesday night, 11th of October, provoked immediate accusations that Downing Street had performed another screeching U-turn, having previously rejected calls to impose a windfall tax on electricity-generating power companies. On the leadership trail, Liz Truss repeatedly resisted calls to cap huge profits being generated by power companies after Boris Johnson's government imposed a £5 billion windfall tax on oil and gas companies in May, taking a slice of their profits. The business department said it was stepping in with a temporary cost-plus revenue limit for renewable and nuclear electricity generators in England and Wales. This will curb the amount generators can make, allowing generators to cover their costs, plus receive an appropriate revenue, and will come into force at the start of next year. The detail was contained in the government's new energy prices bill, which limits power prices for households at an average of £2,500 a year and is estimated will cost taxpayers about £89 billion. It has been estimated that taxing electricity generators such as wind and solar farms could raise between £3 and £4 billion to help offset some of this cost. Ed Miliband, the Shadow Climate and Net Zero Secretary, said the government has finally accepted the principle of Labour's call for a windfall tax on excess profits of electricity generators. After months of telling the country they were utterly opposed to the principle of a windfall tax, they have been dragged kicking and screaming to implement it. Yet again, this shows the Labour Party leading the agenda in British politics with another screeching U-turn from a government in office but not in power. But the government's delay in acting will have cost billions of pounds and the public will pay the price. Prime Minister Liz Truss ruled out a windfall tax on electricity generators when vying with Rishi Sunak to become Prime Minister, calling it a Labour idea and all about bashing business, and it sends the wrong message to international investors and to the public. She reinforced her stance when announcing her household bills package last month, saying, "I believe it is the wrong thing to be putting companies off investing in the United Kingdom." But after reversing plans to scrap the top rate of tax last week, Liz Truss's decision to limit profits at renewable power companies will be seen as another sign of weakness. The government has been accused by institutions including the International Monetary Fund of making the Bank of England's cutting inflation job harder. Mortgage rates soared along with government borrowing costs after Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng's disastrous mini-budget last month. An industry source said, "This is another U-turn and it's a 100% of windfall tax from the people that said they would never do it." The business department argues that the measure differs from a windfall tax as it will be applied to excess revenues generators are receiving rather than applying to all of their profits. The Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy said renewable power generators have been benefiting from abnormally high prices because of the link between soaring gas prices and wholesale electricity prices since the start of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Low-carbon electricity generators are therefore benefiting from abnormally high prices, while consumers are having to pay significantly more for energy generated from renewables and nuclear power, even though they often cost less to produce. The government said the limit would be a temporary measure to deal with the exceptional market conditions driven by high global gas prices. The decision to impose a cap on revenues earned by renewable power companies such as wind and solar power operators follows months of wrangling between the government and industry.
From our Imams, the ninth Imam is the first, whose Imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakati.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. And Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, the Messenger of Allah. This great Imam was one of the founders of the jurisprudence of the Ahlul Bayt, peace and blessings upon them all. He was one of the founders of the very jurisprudence of the Ahlul Bayt that represented creation, originality, and the progress of intellect. Scholars have reported from Imam al-Jawad a wonderful variety of wisdom and literature regarding noble deeds and conducts that are among the most precious maxims dealing with different educational and moral and ethical issues.
Parts of Ziyara texts of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Peace be upon you, O shining lights. Peace be upon you, O rising full moon. Peace be upon you, O pure one from among the pure ones. Peace be upon you, O immaculate from among the immaculate ones. Peace be upon you, O pleased and pure. Peace be upon you, O Aba Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious, the faithful leader, and Allah's mercy and blessings be upon you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about these beautiful dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. We find that in the time of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, the Islamic world was being filled with the importation of different sciences, including Greek philosophy, different kind of theologies such as the Judaic and Christian theologies, as well as the different physical sciences such as chemistry and physics and the like. In this kind of an environment, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, despite his young age, was a part of different kinds of debates which occurred at that time. And of course, Imam al-Jawad was asked a whole variety of different questions. Now, in one such debate and in one such instance, we find that an individual came and asked Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam about the attributes of Allah. Now, of course, with these different philosophical sciences, these different theological points of views, not only that were non-Muslim theological points of view, but Islamic ones as well, we find that it was necessary for Imam al-Jawad to tackle this issue. So, in response to the question from this individual who asked about the Tawheed of Allah, the attributes of Allah, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam says, Allah has no like, no opposite, no equal, no manner, no end, and no dangers. It is prohibited for hearts to compare Allah, for minds have a tendency to limit Allah, and for consciousness to fashion Allah. Allah is far above the aspects of His creatures and the features of His people, and exalted be Allah in high exaltation above that. So here we find that Imam al-Jawad gives this beautiful description of Tawheed, saying, of course, that Allah has no like, Allah has no opposite, Allah has no equal. And of course that Allah has no manner and Allah has no end. Because manners are something that are not always constant, whereas Allah is the ultimate and the most perfect constant. And also Imam al-Jawad says it is prohibited for hearts to try to compare Allah, for Allah is uncomparable. And on top of that, the people's minds and conscience have a tendency to limit Allah or to fashion Allah to their own inclinations and own imagination. Whereas Allah is the creator of all the creatures and all the people, and He is far above being anything like His creatures. Yes, it can be said the other way around, that some of Allah's creatures are like Allah. For example, the Holy Prophet, Imam Ali, the Ahlul Bayt, the Imams, these people, these creatures, these human beings had attributes of Allah. But we can never say it the other way around, for Allah is exalted above anything that is attributed to Him. This is dialogue, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
From our Imams, the ninth Imam is the first, whose Imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old. Basically, look at the special wisdom that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to our ninth Imam. What is zinat? Beauty. But let us go to the hadith of the Imam, where Imam talks about a zinat in a very different level. That Imam talks about the beauty of speech. وَالْفَصَاحَةُ زِينَةُ الْكَلَامِ. Kalam means speech. Human beings all have the ability to speak. But then in this common, ability of all human beings to talk, Imam says if you look for the beauty in that, it's eloquence, fasahat. Eloquence is beauty of the speech. And so, the person who has worked hard on this and is able to present himself more eloquent, this will be considered as a zenith of the speech of that individual.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The notorious Guantanamo Bay prison is a stain on the human rights record of the U.S. 20 years on, and this prison still stands as the symbol of the most disgraceful human rights abuses in the world. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. Global Times wrote, on January 11, 2002, the U.S. military began detailing captives of its global so-called war on terror at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, starting one of the longest and darkest chapters of its abusive treatment of suspects. In the years to come, hundreds of foreign Muslim men and even boys would be secretly detained, denied due process, and subjected to physical and psychological abuses, some of which amount to torture. According to New York Times, as of July 2022, the U.S. has imprisoned 780 men and boys at Guantanamo since 9/11, many of whom were later determined to have little or no connection with Al-Qaeda. Nine have died at the facility. Although President Obama ordered its close within 1 year in 2009, 36 remain detained. Since the beginning, Guantanamo has been an arrangement that aims to circumvent both domestic and international legal supervision. To start with, a detention site located at a U.S. Navy base on foreign soil provides the convenience of complete U.S. jurisdiction and control while avoiding the unpleasantness of any domestic legal oversight. Back then, the Bush administration labeled detainees there as unlawful combatants, a newly coined term, rather than the traditional prisoners of war. This labeling tactic gives the U.S. discretion to decide how these detainees would be treated. Because the U.S., one of the 196 states that have ratified the Geneva Conventions of 1949, is bound to guarantee POWs a minimum standard of care, including safe accommodation, adequate food and medical attention, as well as immediate release and repatriation after the cessation of active hostilities. States are required by these conventions to offer the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, access to detainees and prohibited from exposing POWs to violence, torture, or cruel treatment. Unlawful combatants, a term undefined in the Geneva Conventions or any other treaties, are therefore not guaranteed the above-mentioned legal protection. With the authorization of the U.S. administration and the military, the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, later created and subjected numerous detainees to the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, such as beating, sleep and food deprivation, extreme noise, isolation, severe cold, sexual humiliation, stress position, mock drowning, waterboarding, and walling. For over two decades, Guantanamo Bay has been at the center of controversy. It stands as a haunting moment of human rights violations by the U.S. on the grounds of national security. Through Guantanamo, the U.S. suggests to the world that it is acceptable to sideline human rights and humane treatment of detainees in the name of countering terrorism. More than two decades on, many in the U.S. still know little of the details of the systematic abuses carried out by the CIA and U.S. military against these foreign people for reasons. To start off, successive U.S. administrations have connived at these wrongdoings and chosen to cover up this moral low ground in its so-called war on terror. Only people cleared by the Pentagon can fly to the heavily guarded base. Proceedings from Guantanamo's military commissions, a flawed system to persecute prisoners at the base, have never been publicly broadcast. And transparency requests from media and activist groups have been resisted on the grounds that non-public information is classified. The Bush administration tried to block federal courts from reviewing Guantanamo cases. In the face of mounting domestic pressure, the Obama administration reviewed the legal status of each detainee, but concluded that the detainees could continue to be held under the laws of war and not treated as POWs. In 2014, the Senate Intelligence Committee only released a heavily redacted summary of its 2014 report on the CIA torture program. The current administration has no intention to release the full Senate report, much less criminally investigate those responsible for creating, authorizing, or implementing the CIA's secret detention and torture program. Like the previous ones, it also opposes allowing the International Criminal Court to include abuses by U.S. nationals in its investigation on grave human rights crimes in Afghanistan. Besides, popular culture in the U.S. has often soft-pedaled and glorified the cruelty and failure of these measures. For example, the 2012 Hollywood blockbuster movie Zero Dark Thirty and the 2019 interrogation exhibit at the International Spy Museum in Washington trivialized the abuses inflicted on suspects and went so far as to suggest erroneously that torture worked. Guantanamo is hardly the only scourge from the U.S. so-called War on Terror. Its counterterrorism campaign has spread to 85 countries with scant transparency or oversight. Brown University's Cost of War project found out that with the participation of U.S. allies, the CIA secretly and extrajudicially transferred at least 119 foreign Muslims from one foreign country to another for incommunicado detention and harsh interrogation to various CIA black sites. The U.S. military also held thousands of foreign Muslim security detainees and POWs, including women and boys, at its detention centers abroad, including Abu Ghraib in Iraq and Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, subjected many to physical and psychological abuse, and denied them access to lawyers and right to challenge the basis for their imprisonment. Despite the controversy, the U.S. has continued its cruel and inhumane practices against terrorism suspects to this day, transferring them to U.S.-run sites overseas where they are subject to torture. It is deeply disheartening to see a country that has been so central to the drafting of core international human rights instruments breaking its commitments. Before Guantanamo turns 21, bold steps need to be taken to reverse the course. Truth needs to be told. Justice needs to be upheld. Wrongs need to be made right. Those responsible for terrorist attacks must be held accountable to law and serve their terms properly to atone for their crimes. So are those who have incarcerated, tortured, and killed innocent men and women, boys and girls, in the name of countering terrorism. Also, New York Times wrote, at millions per detainee, Guantanamo prison stuck in a cycle of costly delays. More than 20 years have passed since the George W. Bush administration brought the first detainees to this remote outpost in southeast Cuba. 4 months after the attacks of September 11, 2001, it was a makeshift temporary mission and it is still being run that way. Expeditionary style, as the military calls it. Over the years, the Guantanamo prison has cost $7 billion and has housed 780 detainees and tens of thousands of troops on mostly year-long or shorter tours of duty. Even now, with just 36 detainees at the prison, each costs $13 million a year. When a brigadier general from the Michigan National Guards becomes the 21st commander later this year, he will inherit many of the same challenges as those who commanded before him. Moldy, unsafe buildings, an outsized prison staff, and ailing, aging detainees, some still suffering the consequences of torture in CIA prisons 2 decades ago.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith which has been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam regarding the importance of unity between people. Now, as you know, we are in the week of unity, the week of unity between Muslims. This today specifically is also, according to the stronger Shiite narrations, the birthday of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It's also the birthday of Imam Sadiq alaihi salam. And for these reasons, we would like to offer our congratulations to our esteemed listeners on this most auspicious and happy days. You know, there are many hadiths and verses of the Holy Quran regarding the importance of unity between people, between Muslims, and even between the followers of all of the Abrahamic faiths. You know, there's a verse, famous verse in the Holy Quran, in which God says, addressing the Prophet, he says, "Tell the people of the book to come. Let's come together and come to a consensus, come to an agreement." Qul ya ahl al kitab, right? It says, "O people of the book, come. Let's make a consensus. Let's make an agreement with one another that we will not worship, you know, anybody but God, and we will not take, people, right? For example, our superiors as our lords, right? You know, we're not going to listen to, these people who are at higher posts than us, and we're not going to worship them and disobey a God, by listening to their orders." Right, so even God Almighty in the Holy Quran, He even encourages unity between peoples of other faiths, right? The people of the book. And so this really clearly indicates the importance of, of unity. In a very beautiful hadith, it's been narrated by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. It's been narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that the Imam said, "A charitable act most loved by God is reconciliation between people if they have fallen out, if people have disagreed with one another, are fighting and quarreling with one another. Reconciling them is an act of charity. It's considered a sadaqah." The actual word used here is sadaqah. It's an act of charity. In continuation, the Imam says, "And bringing them together when they have become distanced from one another." If we bring them together after they have become distanced from one another, right? This is considered an act of charity. It has the same reward as one would get if by, handing over some, money in charity to a poor person, right? This is how important this is. In fact, the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, whose birthday it is today, said, "Shall I inform you of something that holds a higher status than fasting, praying, and giving charity?" Prophet said, "Making peace between people." Right? This clearly indicates, the importance of unity and, making peace between people. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the importance of unity in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.